Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Tim Mullaney with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into my conversation with Comfort Care CEO Steve Greenbaum, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase, whose powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. Spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. In his first year as CEO of Comfort Care, Steve Greenbaum has focused on learning the ins and outs of home care while helping shape the company's innovative approach to growth. Comfort Care is part of an expanding platform of related franchise brands owned by private equity firm The Riverside Company. Their goal is to ultimately provide wraparound services for older adults. As part of the strategy, Comfort Care is also striking partnerships across the care continuum, including with Kindred at Home. Comfort Care has been investing heavily in technology, and Steve shared information about how they're upgrading their systems for its more than 200 independently owned locations in the U.S. and Canada.
Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you.
So I want to start just by delving into your background a little bit because I think it's an interesting story. You are an entrepreneur, and I think, was it the first company you founded was called PostNet, is that right?
It is, and I am an entrepreneur. Back in the early 80s, we had identified kind of an opportunity in the private mailbox industry that over the next 10 years kind of evolved into a retail shipping and mailbox business, started franchising that business with the brand PostNet in July of 1993, and developed over 660 locations in 10 countries, actually through April of 2017.
Wow, interesting. So obviously with the franchising model there, we can already sort of see some parallels with the home care industry. But just curious to turn the clock back even further, were you always kind of entrepreneurial minded? Did you always have it in mind to start a business?
Actually, I did. And it's, you know, it's funny, I guess a lot of people say and hear these kind of things from people like me. But, you know, when I was a kid, I was raking leaves and mowing lawns and, you know, returning bottles for neighbors. And it's so funny when I think about sort of my kids and the environment they grew up in today. And they're hardworking people, but I always had money as a kid. And because there was always opportunity, there was always something to do and things to do. And I can honestly tell you that I always knew that I was going to grow a business, run a business, you know, create opportunity. I think as far back as I can remember, I always knew that.
So how did you sort of prepare for that life? Did you study business in school, or how did you get the skill set that you need?
Yeah, no, I'll be honest with you. I think, you know, there are a lot of people that are very focused on, you know, having a set goal and knowing where they want to be. And I think that's wonderful. And clearly in my business life today, that's very much how I'm driven. But I'll tell you that I think it was just kind of inherent in my personality at the time. You know, my mom and dad were hardworking people. And, you know, so I knew that in order to get ahead, I was going to have to, you know, kind of help and make my own way. And so it was always kind of inherently in the way that I thought and acted and felt. So it would be unfair for me to tell you that it was really well planned. I think it became a much better planned when I started to venture into business. And then you start to see, you know, how people and process and technology and all of the tools that we use and all the folks that support us, you know, how important they are and how important planning and structure and those things are. But no, I really just kind of followed my heart.
Great. And where did you grow up?
Grew up in Chicago.
Great. Well, that's where we're based.
Yeah, it's a great place.
Yeah, we love it here. And definitely there's that hardworking ethos in the city. So I think I read that when you were, I believe, still with PostNet, you appeared on the show Undercover Boss. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, I did. And I also appeared on a special that they had called Undercover Employee, which was kind of a fun, I don't know if you'd call it a pilot. They ended up not pursuing it, but it was actually another episode called Undercover Employee. Yeah.
What was the premise of Undercover Employee?
The premise was, since I had already gone undercover as the boss, there was a high level of likelihood it'd be hard to pull that off again. And so I actually asked one of the employees on my journey that I'd met on my original journey to come back with me and go undercover. And he had a mic in his ear, and I had a, I was in a, you know, mobile vehicle, and he was now going back in because there's things I wanted to continue to learn about the business. And so I would ask him questions, and I would engage him with the owner. He was kind of the, you know, the person undercover behind me. And it was interesting, but I think I don't know if it flew as a premise, but it was an interesting show.
Why did you agree to appear on Undercover Boss? I feel like there's obviously a little bit of risk there.
Oh yeah, no, there's a lot of risk. You know, you've got to be very transparent. You've got to be very prepared to be open and honest. And, you know, you're clearly to make good television, you know, you got to tell it as it is. And so, you know, not all of us want to air our entire, you know, family and personal history on national television. But I would say for a couple reasons. One is that I knew that for the business and the brand and the franchisees, this would be wonderful exposure for the company. Two, I thought that the idea of going into a program like that, you know, I was a founder, very hands-on, very close with our owners, and prided myself on knowing a lot about our business. So even I said, geez, you know, can I really learn something here, which was interesting. So it was just sort of that idea that notwithstanding, you know, being willing to air your personal life on national television, what could I learn about the business? Where could I add value? And I also knew how important it was to our franchise owners for our brand to be highly visible. So not just the value of putting the brand on the air, but how much it would mean to our franchisees to see their brand on national television. And I mean, that was a big driver for me.
Mm-hmm. Great. So can you sort of now talk us through, you founded this company, you're obviously very hands-on, as you said. It sounds like you had success in growing the company. Talk us through the process from that to the Comm for Care opportunity coming onto your radar.
Yeah. So we were approached in just late 2017 with interest from a company that wanted to expand in the U.S. market. Long, hard decision. I had years of wonderful memories and really enjoyed every moment of the work I did with PostNet. But ended up deciding to pursue that for a number of reasons. And it wasn't a matter of a couple of months after that transaction when I was kind of trying to figure out where I wanted to go with my career. And there were a number of opportunities that were coming my way. And then the Comfort Care opportunity kind of came my way. And clearly my initial reaction was, oh, wow, this is an industry I don't know very well and something I've not done before. But I think what attracted me and why I'm here is, first of all, this company is owned by an organization called the Riverside Company, which is a private equity firm that is highly respected in franchising, highly respected in private equity, very values driven, very entrepreneurial organization run by two entrepreneurial founders. And so that was interesting to me. And some of my dear friends had done business with the Riverside Company for years, one of them being Dina Dwyer Owens with the Dwyer Group, who was a very successful franchise organization developed with the support of the Riverside team. So that was appealing to me. The other thing that was appealing to me is the idea of working in an industry that really makes a difference like this. All of my career, I have cared deeply about being a part of a business that adds value, that gives back, that creates opportunity. And, you know, at PostNet, we were very small business centric and small business focused. And that was our opportunity to contribute kind of to the economic engine in the country. And that mattered. At Comfort Care, the opportunity to take care of folks in their homes, to help them to improve the quality of their life age at home, and then more importantly, do it in accordance with Comfort Care's kind of primary purpose, which I love, which is to help people live their best life possible. That was appealing to me. And then the third piece of it was Riverside's vision was to build a multi-brand platform of companies servicing aging adults along the continuum of care. And so the idea of adding that kind of value throughout, you know, the point in time when someone enters the need for care, and of course, later stages of their life, just that whole idea of giving back, adding value, contributing to the quality of people's lives really was attractive to me.
So I believe we talked back in January, shortly after you took on the role at Comfort Care, and you said it would be a learning year for you. Obviously, you came in with some background that I assume was helpful, particularly in knowing how to navigate the sort of franchise structure. But just curious what you sort of have learned in this learning year.
Yeah, well, I mean, my gosh, it's like drinking through two fire hoses. And I can tell you that it was clear to me that this is a fairly complex business and industry, you know, between, you know, the home care we provide, and then we also provide private duty nursing. And then there are, of course, our state-specific requirements. There are, you know, all sorts of need to adhere to best practices and standards of care and quality of care, and not only from how we bring a patient into our care and the development of the care plan through the execution of that plan. So it's uniquely different in that way from anything I've done before. I've also learned, as I've operated among now with a number of competitors and companies in the industry, that differentiation is key. It's absolutely critical to help clients and caregivers understand what it is that's unique or different about us, and how that support of the continuum of care adds to the value proposition, which is something that I feel strongly about again. And then the other thing I would tell you is I have been impacted and impressed by the franchisees, the quality of the folks in this organization. They're exceptional people, with many, if not most of them, that have felt a calling to serve in this business, which is really powerful, really powerful.
Mm-hmm. I think that you also spoke about, you and some of the folks from Riverside spoke about the growth objectives for the company, and those are pretty ambitious, I think. I think at that time, the goal was to double the size of the company within 3 to 5 years. Is that still sort of the target?
Oh, yeah. No, it absolutely is. In fact, you know, subsequently, we've acquired a brand called Care Patrol that's in the placement services business, and they have 150 franchisees as well. So now our combined organization is up to around 350. And I think I had shared with you that, you know, our goal was to acquire and develop an organization of 7 to 10 brands. So we continue to seek opportunities, grow organically, and I think it's a very realistic goal.
And you spoke about differentiation, which I think is a great point, because there are so many home care sort of options out there, and I think for the consumer it can be tough to know which one to choose, what do they all provide, what are the different types of care, etc. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think one way that Comfort Care is really starting to differentiate itself is through this strategy of creating this kind of family of brands. And I think last time we spoke about it, you made the comparison with some of what the Dwyer Group did with is it the Neighborly brands, that is basically a, you know, all different types of home services business, from maid services to glass to handyman, you name it. It's kind of all under the same umbrella. And the idea, I think, is to do something similar with kind of senior care, senior services. So is that the right idea? And if you could kind of expand on that model and how that maybe is differentiating Comfort Care in the marketplace, that'd be great.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to. No, quite frankly, we will be very soon. I regret that I'm not able to announce it now, but there'll be a new name for, I think I had told you, for the platform company that will service all of the brands, and that will be announced soon. So we'll share that with you either by way of a press release. We're excited about that. And, you know, clearly, I think we had shared, I had shared with you before, you know, clearly we're working in the home care space, which we love, and now in the placement services space. We're also looking at private duty nursing and home health. I think we talked about that. We're expanding our own private duty nursing program here within Comfort Care. We're looking at businesses that are in the area of home modifications and renovations to, again, allow people to safely age in their homes. We're looking at hospice and palliative care businesses. And the idea, of course, and businesses that will functionally support seniors and aging adults at various stages and needs within their life. And if you want to contrast that to Neighborly, the idea is having a suite of services and products to support individuals for every need and any need that they may have. And I think that's the key differentiator. And being able to have the technology to understand the customer or client profile and their needs and know what to offer them when and how, and making sure that we're not just selling services to people, but we're adding value. We're making it easier for them or more effective or meaningful for them to live their lives. So that not only we think is a differentiator, but it's going to be a big value add for our clients.
And you mentioned technology. Are there specific types of technology that you think will be most helpful or that you're looking at investing in right now?
Yeah, well, quite frankly, I mean, as you look at this business and industry, there's a lot of dynamics that are going on here now. I mean, even the fundamental operating systems that most of the folks in this space use manage a lot of data and a lot of specific information. But as you look at the industry, like kind of longer term, our vision for this is really something more integrated. So think about the fact that we have caregivers in homes with clients every day. And so we have the opportunity to make observations and report on those observations and track and manage that information. And then, of course, the client themselves have not only medical history, but they have specific drugs or pharmaceuticals that they take. And when you connect observation-based data, you know, how is Steve looking and feeling today? What's his coloring like? And then you layer that with some background on medical history and, you know, drug interactions and, you know, what I'm taking, what I need. And there are now a number of platforms that are coming out that provide predictive analytics. And those are also integrated with, you know, home and medical automation, like, you know, sensors and blood pressure monitoring and blood sugar monitoring and sleep monitoring. And so these technologies allow for some predictive forecast where this collection of data and the way that these algorithms are looked at would allow us to say, wow, you know what, Steve could be heading for an event, you know, based on this analysis of the data, and A, through telemed, get me on the phone with a doctor, B, get me to a doctor or an emergency room to avoid rehospitalization or a catastrophic event. So I believe that combination of, again, people, technology, analytics, and monitoring is really the future of the industry.
So obviously growing that platform and that family of companies is one mechanism for growth, but I think you're also starting to forge some partnerships as well. One that was recently announced was with Kindred at Home. Can you talk about that, what that partnership entails?
Yeah, no, I absolutely can. You know, I mean, I think, you know, clearly it's a mutual referral-based partnership. There are only three partners they've selected to work with. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think it really demonstrates our commitment to provide a comprehensive approach to that transition of care that I think is critical to us. And they're one of many organizations that we're looking to partner with you know, again, so that we're able to provide this very consistent, non-disruptive to the client level of care.
Great. And I assume that that is, when you talk about comprehensive approach to transition of care, I'm thinking back to what you were just talking about with the technology and being a little bit more proactive and being able to identify when exacerbations might happen and how to intervene. I assume that there's some role that technology plays in being able to know kind of the best moment for when a transition of care needs to happen, and then being able to communicate as well with those care partners across the continuum is also a key capability. Am I right in assuming those things?
You're 100% right in assuming that. In fact, what's interesting is, like most industries now, we're looking with Kindred and others at how we integrate our technology platforms so that we can share data in both directions.
So Kindred at Home is owned now partially by Humana, which is a big Medicare Advantage insurer. And Medicare Advantage just, I think, is a really big buzzword right now in home care circles because of the play Humana made with Kindred at Home, and also because of some changes that are coming down the pike with MA plans now being allowed to offer non-skilled in-home care as an allowable benefit. So I think from what we've heard, you know, everyone's trying to suss out what the insurers are going to do, what that benefit might look like, what the scope of this opportunity with Medicare Advantage is. Just curious what you make of the MA opportunity.
Yeah, no, I think we're like everybody right now. And I know that a lot of folks are frustrated, you know, with the, you know, the comment, but I think like everybody, you know, we're paying attention to monitoring, engaging, you know, how we would pursue this, and how it would be implemented in the organization. You know, there are only a few providers right now that I'm aware of that are offering home care as a supplemental benefit. And that's only in select areas. So I think we're like a lot of folks in a wait and see, situation. To basically see as other providers come forward, you know, if they'll be offering more substantial plans during the October 2019 enrollment period, and just kind of like everyone else, wanting to make sure that, you know, that we enter that opportunity at the right time in the right way when it becomes available.
Mm-hmm. But, and I assume that had to be, the Medicare Advantage changes had to be in mind as you were sort of talking with Kindred at Home about what that partnership might be, and you must feel good about how it positions you, at least with Humana, as they are sort of thinking about what they do with this benefit. Is that true?
It is 100% true, absolutely. You know, a lot of us in the industry are laying the groundwork to take real advantage of that opportunity and to provide a great value-added service to clients as it unfolds. Of course, we're going to prepare for it, and in the meantime, we're offering a great solution for both organizations.
Right. So I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about staffing. This is the number one challenge we hear over and over from people in the sort of across the board in senior care, whether it's home care, home health, assisted living, you name it. So just curious, how is Comfort Care trying to recruit and retain staff given all the big workforce challenges from caregiver shortage to tight labor markets to rising wages?
Yeah, no, I, you know, it's funny, if you were to ask me what's keeping me up at night, that's the thing I would tell you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, quite frankly, it takes a much more creative approach. You know, we've launched a program here called Caregiver First, and we're providing very specific tools, training, and support of a career path for caregivers throughout the organization. And, you know, like a lot of companies right now, we're really trying to create more opportunity, you know, create more revenue for those positions. You know, I, you know, at the end of the day, transitional sort of opportunities make a lot of sense to us, which are young folks at the early stages of their career, folks that are on the backside of their career that are looking forward to opportunities to taking care of other folks. So it's a little bit of creativity. It's creating opportunity and thinking more about how we can you know, fill a funnel with people that see this kind of a career either as something they really, you know, it's a calling and something they really want to do, or even if it's something that's transitional, so that for the time we have them, we can provide exceptional care to our clients.
And you talked about that sort of reaching across generations, which is something we've been hearing more and more about, attracting the young workers, but also maybe tapping the older worker pool, maybe retirees. And that seems like a great strategy, I think, or at least it makes sense to me. But there must be some sort of logistical challenges there too. And I was just before we got on this call to record this, I was looking at a new report from Village Capital, sort of looking at the playing field for startups related to the senior health space. And one point that they made, or one finding in that report, was that many home care agencies rely on browser-based tools, I'm reading right from the report now, like Monster or Indeed, to recruit aides and caregivers. And that leaves out a swath of the workforce that don't have access to a laptop or desktop. And a lot of people who are potentially able to fill these positions are actually living below the poverty line, and they're much more likely than other people not to have smartphones or access to job information through some of these digital platforms. So I'm just curious if you can speak to maybe how you're doing outreach or how you're reaching these various different sort of demographic groups that you're trying to woo.
Yeah, so like everyone else, we are absolutely using platforms that are going to give us sort of broad-based coverage and attracting caregivers. I mean, that would be a best practice for anybody, but it's also the opportunity to get out in the community and to work with local nursing schools, religious institutions. So, you know, literally going where folks would be in the community that fit our profile for a caregiver makes a lot of sense. Youth organizations, you know, so it's kind of a technology meets shoe leather approach, quite frankly.
All right. Well, one question I'd like to ask all guests, and I'm curious what your answer is, given that you, I think, come from obviously an entrepreneurial sort of disruptive background. The name of this podcast is Disrupt. So I'm just curious, how do you define disruption, and do you consider Comfort Care to be a company that is disrupting home care?
Yeah. So I consider disruption to be a radical change in an industry. You know, it often involves a new product or service. And in many cases, that displaces the way people did business before. And so I would tell you, that's a tall order in a business like this, given the kind of work that we all do. But I would tell you that I do think the Riverside model of building a multi-brand franchise organization, and I call it the Riverside model. It's my model. It's our model. We're all in this together. I think that's disruptive, because the idea of providing, you know, these value-based services along the continuum of care, I think that is a unique and potentially disruptive element. But I think that it's an interesting time in this industry. You know, when you go look at some of the information I've been looking at, and then, you know, for any listeners here, I mean, I've been at this a year. This Friday will be 1 year in the seat. And, you know, I'm aware of robotic caregivers that are providing services in Asia. Clearly, that's probably in the world of disruptive. But my pursuit and our pursuit of disruptive is going to be this, again, this future of care based on the integration between what our caregivers see and feel and understand in the home, the predictive analytics that are layered against medication and medical history, and some home automation to allow us to have a better handle on the current condition and needs of the client and protect their health and their safety going forward. I think that's probably going to live more in the world of disruption.
Great. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't get to?
No, I mean, I was going to share, I think I just touched on the fact that we have really moved heavily into private duty nursing, and that is a big push in our organization, which is a great opportunity with Kindred as well. You know, the other thing I would tell you is we are, as an organization, we're upgrading every technology platform in the business. The operating system that this company ran on and managed our offices in for 20 years is being upgraded and replaced this year. We're moving the entire organization into the G Suite platform so that they have full open architecture and APIs and integration so that we can prepare for some of this technology that I was talking about. We've partnered with one of the leading LMS providers to provide more and better state-specific training for caregivers. So on the technology side, we have literally reinvented everything we're doing in this organization. So I might have missed that.
Well, that's great. It was a pleasure chatting with you today. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it very much.